music, that means it is time once again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On today's show, we will be examining a couple of topics dealing with the passage of time. First, we're going to talk about culture that works for everyone, old and young alike. Then we're going to talk a little bit about out of print. Now, by out of print, we simply mean unavailable. We're going to talk about things that we think should be available again that are not available now and how much we would welcome their return. And as always, we'll close with what's making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table and meet the team. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Stephen, who is sitting next to you?
There's this crazy old bat sitting next to me. It's kind of harshing my buzz right
now. It's harshing your buzz.
My mommy is filling in for Mr. Trey Graham right now.
I want to point out here that I was advertised as a special guest, and when I read that there was a special guest on this show, I was so excited. Joss Whedon, I thought, or maybe Neil Gaiman, and then I realized it was me. So I apologize.
You realized how disappointed everyone was?
Yes, I apologize to every PCHHer.
What is your name?
Maggie Thompson.
And Maggie Thompson, what did you do for NPR?
I contribute. I'm a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm proud to say. And then one of my donations consisted of my son, who moved to the East Coast from Wisconsin.
Well, we are incredibly pleased to have Maggie with us. We have another special guest with us because we are short one Glenn Weldon as well. So over on the mic again, our esteemed producer, Jess Gittner. Jess Gittner!
Hello.
What do you do at NPR besides this?
I am a producer at Morning Edition, working the hours of 11:30 p.m. to 7:30 a.m.
Jess has
so this is your, like, this is your 4 a.m.
This is like 3 a.m. for me.
Yeah.
But
hero.
Who can tell, though?
For love of the game.
You're fresh as a daisy. So what we were going to talk about this week, and, you know, we figured, we've got Stephen's mom.
Mm-hmm.
We figured,
who has actual credentials, by the way,
exactly,
other than being my mother.
Well, and we should explain. Maggie is a well-known comics guru, I think we can say.
I think we can say that.
Longtime editor of Comics Buyer's Guide.
Yeah.
And writer of various wonderful things, currently blogging for Comic-Con, as I understand.
Yes, that is among my new projects now that Comics Buyer's Guide is defunct.
Oh. Right. And as Stephen explained a few weeks ago, you are moving into phase two.
Yes, that's absolutely true. I'm working on developing my own website, plus blogging for Toucan, which is the online blog of comiccon.org. And I also contribute weekly to the Diamond Comic Distributors website, newsletter, whatever.
So what we're saying is Maggie is not fooling around.
That's right.
This is no charity move.
Her output is not usually so spotty.
Exactly. Well, we were going to talk about things that we think work for ages old and young because, you know, we've got Stephen's mom. We've also got Stephen's kids are with us in the building today.
Mm-hmm.
So we're running a larger gamut than usual, we would
of
say.
Of Thompson's, anyway.
Of Thompson's. So, Stephen, you have a mom.
I do.
And you have kids.
I do.
How do you look at intergenerational appeal?
Boy, you know, usually when I crack on my mother, she's, at least on this show, she's right. Not in the room.
Right.
So I'm going to try not to look to my left very much when I talk about this. My parents, as I think I've mentioned on this show before, had a tendency to view parenting as an opportunity to share the things that they like
right.
culturally, which is very much what my mother has done for her entire incredibly lengthy career. So very old. And so a lot of years of my childhood were spent being sat down and made to watch things. And, you know, so you need to see Midnight Cowboy. You know,
that was a weird one.
Yeah, you need to see Jaws. You need to have shark nightmares for the duration for your entire childhood. And so when I think of things that I want to share with my kids, it tends to be stuff that has trickled through that filter uh-huh. of being a happy memory for me
yeah.
uh-huh. rather than an endurance test, like right. when I had to sit through the Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
So the immediate thoughts that I had and the things that I just could not wait to share with my kids are things like Warner Brothers cartoons. And, I mean, The Simpsons started when I was 17. That almost counts. You know, my mm-hmm. kids are in the process of memorizing every single episode of The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly something. Now, it's not necessarily for every age, because I think there's probably a ceiling age-wise though I've got a unifying theory that I'm going to get to in a moment.
I was going to say, I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, well, and I'm contradicting my own unifying theory.
All right.
But and there's also a floor. I think there's a point at which you probably don't want your kids watching The Simpsons. And
Seven or eight months old.
And I dug beneath that floor
when
getting my kids into it. I'll get to my unifying theory in a moment, but I think we should bring in some other panelists.
I could not agree more. Now, I'm going to get back to Maggie, but first I'm going to swing over to Jess. Jess, having not had the Thompson family experience, what is your kind of experience with things trickling down and up through generations or across generations? How do you view that kind of thing?
Well, I have the good fortune of having parents of a certain age and half siblings.
My age?
A little older, Stephen. We will run into that joke several times in the course of this podcast.
Jess will be editing that joke
FYI.
Out several times. But
my siblings, my half siblings, are in their late 30s, early 40s. Uh-huh. So I sort of have more pop culture from different eras spilling down at me.
Right.
So for me, I think I might have gotten a little bit more out of my siblings because I just thought they were way cooler.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You would pay attention to them in a different way than your parents, presumably.
Yeah, and I think for me, musically, that gave me the biggest breadth of knowledge. Like, you know, I had the Beach Boys records, and then for better or worse, I had Joshua Tree, you know, U2, Prince, Purple Rain, cassettes, you know, Billy Joel.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking this weekend, I think that's true of any siblings, because my sister is only 3 years older than I am, but there are still certain things that I just hear and I think of as, oh, that's something that she liked when we were in school, when we were in middle school or high school, that yesterday somebody was playing Billy Idol, and I thought that I remember that she had a Billy Idol poster. Now, she was not like a crazy all-out Billy Idol person, but I know she had a Billy Idol poster at one point. And so I still think of that as, oh, that's her thing. That's one of her things. Mm. The same way that I think of some things as, like, that's my dad's thing or that's my mom's thing.
So do you feel isolated from it for that reason?
No. I would say it's the opposite. I sort of feel like I have a line into it, sort of, in a way that I otherwise wouldn't. It was the same way that Jess has some way to access Billy Joel that she probably otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah, and Billy Joel was actually the first concert I ever went to. My brother
Good
gave me
you.
The choice, Alanis Morissette or Billy Joel. And, you know, it was the album after Alanis Morissette had released Jagged Little Pill. So I was like, oh, they're not going to play the hits. better go for Billy Joel.
So you have sort of, because you have older siblings who are X older and then parents who are 2X older or whatever it is, you have sort of a spread of generation.
Yeah, but at the same time, I will say both my siblings and parents, they are nowhere near, you know, the Maggie Thompsons.
In terms of age?
Oh, no. In terms of... Perhaps, but they're nowhere near in terms of their enthusiasm for pop culture.
Right.
I mean, if they were peers, they would be limited in their knowledge, let's say.
Yeah. Well, Maggie, so now that we've been indicting you explain to me your philosophy of indoctrinating your children with culture, as I know you did.
There were things that they needed to experience.
Oh, God, that tone. The tone is just etched into my very soul.
And a lot of that is what every parent does, which is to say, I grew up with X. X was great. My children need to have X. And so I grew up surrounded by books. My mother was a science fiction writer you've never heard of. And so there was only a brief spell in which I was reading children's books, per se. That said, among the recordings that were available there were things such as Winnie the Pooh, not the Disney version, and Winnie the Pooh, in fact, in a version you can't get because Disney then took the rights. And
we'll get back to that kind of thing.
And Basil Rathbone narrating Peter and the Wolf.
Oh, I love Basil Rathbone narrating.
And he says,
my dear children.
I was one of his dear children. Mm-hmm. That's electrifying. We had a record player that did not survive long, but was early enough that you could start it going in reverse and then play it from the inside out, so that instead of pussycat, pussycat, where have you been? I heard about tacky soup, tacky soup. there were entertainments then, let me tell you, you young whippersnappers.
And those are kind of lost to the ages. My kids don't have, you know, aren't playing turntables in their room.
Exactly.
So there were certain things that you were determined to get them to experience.
Absolutely.
How did you feel if they did not respond to them, or does that feel like a personal affront when they're like, oh, Mom, this is the most boring thing I ever heard in my life? Not that I would think Stephen would ever do
that.
No,
never.
I don't think they did.
Yeah.
One of the things that we did.
They wouldn't dare.
Exactly.
We were beaten down by life so early.
Well, one of the advantages to our children's development was that when our daughter Valerie was born, when she turned 2 years old, Sesame Street came on. Mm-hmm. And then as she was learning to read, Electric Company came on. Mm-hmm. And they were all still on as Stephen was growing up. And so there's a wallpaper of information going on in the background at all times, mm-hmm. of entertainment, which we could then add to with things such as Sit Down, My Child, and I Will Read You an Uncle Scrooge Story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which were huge for me, and which I genuinely did, you know, and I haven't passed them on to my own kids as much as I wish I would have. And I still have, you know, volumes and volumes of the Carl Barks, Walt Disney's Comics and Stories, and Uncle Scrooge. And it's one of the things that I wanted to mention as something that adults could read and enjoy. My kids have read and enjoyed. I was obsessed with them as a kid. Mm-hmm. They were one of the few things, they stood out as something that my parents gave me that I actually liked.
But here's the thing. I don't say this to be... This is not directed at Stephen, because it's true of me as well. But it's interesting to me that you do all of this. You have this passion for books and reading, and you direct lots of stuff about books and reading at your kids. And yet, Stephen, as he has talked about many times, reads a lot, but not necessarily the same kind of stuff that you read. Not necessarily a big fiction reader, as I am not a big fiction reader. Right. Reads all day long, just like I do. Reads all day long.
Staring at screens.
But reads nonfiction, reads articles, reads stuff like that, as opposed to being a big novel reader, like I'm sure you are more. So, I mean, it does seem like there is a limit to how much you can push those buttons if they're not going to push.
I would never push a child into something he or she was not enjoying,
yeah.
if the purpose is enjoyment.
As opposed to exposure, which is different.
Exactly. If they were reading Romeo and Juliet in high school, we would point out that is a drama, that is not something to be read. If you're going to deal with it in the class, you're going to watch it. Mm-hmm. And then we would sit him down and he would have to watch all 5 hours or whatever.
This is rough,
BBC.
Man.
Yeah, man.
This
worst.
Is rough.
You know, this is the price you pay for having parents who are nice people.
I know. It's true. people who care about
it's
you,
kind
so
of
I
too,
had the
it's
same
kind
problem.
Of, it's too much of a good thing,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Well, I was going to make one point, which is that as the topic was introduced, it was all ages. What about the youngest, the uh-huh. very youngest? Uh-huh. And I thought as I was considering that, well, what about preverbal? What sort of popular culture could be applied to the preverbal child uh-huh. that would still be pop culture and still be an entertainment? And so it occurred to me that a music hall entertainer from England had performed a song that I grew up with as a 78 RPM record, which I then use to this day for pre-verbal children.
Let's listen.
Oh, there was an old man, and he had an old sow. And there was an old man, and he had an old sow. Lassiferalderay.
Oh. Yeah, I would laugh at that at any age.
And I've heard you perform that for my children.
If you are, for example, dealing with a child who does not want to hold still, the combination of the raspberry, nope, blew it.
You know, you get in front of that microphone.
Yeah, I know,
yeah, it's
I
tough,
know.
It's tough.
Well, you know how they say wet your whistle?
Yeah.
The whistle is tricky.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it is so unexpected mm-hmm. for that infant that it stops the crying.
Yeah.
Briefly.
I laughed. I'm an infant, apparently, today. I laughed when we listened to that clip.
And that was introduced by Rudy Valley. The singer was Cyril Smith. And Rudy Valley introduced it as an old English madrigal called I Heard Three Birds.
Well, all right, Jess Gittner, if you were looking at culture across the generations, what kind of thing would you recommend?
I chose a cartoon that I loved when I was a kid and is a little darker than cartoons today. I'm going to play the theme song. I'm going to see if anyone can guess what it is.
Okay.
Spider-Man.
No.
Is that the Spider-Man?
Almost.
Batman? What?
Yes.
It's Batman. Okay. Is it
You're there.
I got
Batman Adventures, is it not?
So it is Batman the Animated Series.
Right.
Paul Dini and Bruce Timm were the geniuses behind that.
Bruce Timm. And if anyone hasn't seen this Batman, you may know like the style of art. Later on, he did Superman, just like a super squared jaw.
Dark and kind of purple. I'm kind of envisioning it. I didn't watch it when it was on.
And it was from 92 to 95. I was obsessed with it. A little more violent than they allow cartoons to be today, but still not disturbing in a way. So I feel like it can start at around, you know, 6, 7, 8, and then stretch. Like, I would watch it. I own, like, the first 5 episodes on DVD. But really huge names. I mean, that theme song Danny Elfman composed. Mm-hmm. The voices.
Mark Hamill was on that, right?
Mark Hamill. And actually, I want to play a little bit of the Batman voice and the Joker voice, which is just awesome.
Clean up your act, Joker.
Oh, that's a joke, right? Batman finally told a joke.
Out of context, it sounds a little wonky. You could see how it could be for kids. But, you know, Batman doesn't use a gun. But people were injured. I mean, you mentioned Spider-Man. They actually used to have, I think, villains with guns shooting lasers. And nowadays, they don't have that. And I think there's something lost a little bit. I mean, if kids can see so many other things, I don't know. A superhero versus a villain, someone's going to fall down or something. I'm
okay. You
gotta
be able to have some injury. I don't know, or there's no stakes.
My mother is just dying to say that she knows Mark Hamill. She's just dying to name drop Mark Hamill right now. Well, I'm just gonna do it for her so she doesn't have to.
There is a
movie called Comic Book the Movie, directed by Mark Hamill, in which my mother is in a lengthy scene acting with Mark Hamill. It was my mother's one film role. I believe she put herself in IMDb.
I didn't put myself in.
Wow, that is
in it.
I just wanted to spare us like a 10-minute detour.
Maggie's like, I was put in IMDb by one of my many fans. did not put myself in IMDb. So Stephen, did you have any other example that you wanted to offer, or do you just need to reaffirm your philosophy of inculcating your children with The Simpsons?
Well, because the topic was sort of culture that crosses generations. Like, one thing that I wanted to say is something that I often say when asked about demographics. I'll occasionally hear someone say, like, oh, I enjoy NPR music, but I'm not in your desired demographic. Mm-hmm. I'm 63. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or, oh, I'm not cool. Yesterday's old people listened to...
Are today's dead people?
Yes, they are. Yesterday's old people listened to the Glenn Miller Band and are the people you think of sort of shuffling around and you know, sort of hopelessly square pre-rock and
roll.
In the popular imagination of stereotype. Now, of course, it's ridiculous to expect that those people did not leave rich and debaucherous lives.
Of course.
But culturally, in terms of where those people came of age culturally, yesterday's old person grew up listening to the Glenn Miller Band. Today's old person grew up, not that my mother did this, but grew up dropping acid and listening to Jefferson Airplane. We're not indicting you.
Let me just point out one thing. I'm older than that. We were grown-ups. It wasn't a cool grown-uppy thing, so we never did that.
Are you talking about dropping acid or listening to Jefferson Airplane?
Both.
Well, I mean, Grace Slick,
Weavers.
I think, is older. Is Grace Slick older than you are, Mom?
Ooh. Pete Seeger
That's
is.
How old you are.
Yes, Pete Seeger is. That is
yes.
True.
And I grew up listening to Pete Seeger, and my mother worked at the Cornell Music Department, and I bet that I was backstage at Weavers concerts, for example.
Right. And the other thing I think is important to remember, as you're kind of putting this caveat on making assumptions about, you know, today's older person listen to this and listen to that. There are always individual influences that are going to balance out or even totally overwhelm generational influences. There are people who are my age who grew up listening to mostly folk music.
Right.
There are people my age who grew up listening mostly to jazz because it's who their parents were. If you talk to our friend Barry Hardiman, she will tell you she listened to a ton of classical music when she was growing up because that's the parents she had.
Yeah.
So in addition to generational influences, you get individual influences
right.
that, you know, you've got the horizontal strata of a generation, but then you've also got these vertical groupings of like, well, everybody who listens to jazz, whether they grew up in 1930 or 1990, has things in common.
Right.
Right. That aren't just the horizontal, but also the vertical across like what your individual, either what parents you have. And obviously that becomes like your parents somewhat transfer down to you
right.
what they are interested in. Like I listened to more folk music as a kid.
Sure.
Than most people did because that's what my parents like.
Yeah.
And more ragtime. Like, I listened to a lot of ragtime because my mom played the piano and could play ragtime.
Yeah, and I had some of that experience, too. My father was for a time, was a music reviewer for the Cleveland Press and wrote one of the first rave reviews of Bob Dylan, as Mom will boast. And I'm just cutting Mom off like crazy.
You are. You're preempting your mother.
to tell my mother's
children
stories.
Do this.
but, you know, so I certainly had a lot of that folk music in addition, you know, like Peter, Paul, and Mary, you know, but also Bob Dylan and old stand-up comedy records, you know, Bill Cosby
right.
and, you know, a lot of that stuff as well. You know, that also ended up colliding with a lot of the stuff that I was obsessed with when I was coming of age as a kid in terms of the top 40, your Billy Idol and your Prince mm-hmm. and your the music of 1984 to 87, where I suddenly became incredibly obsessed with music. So one thing that I've found talking to people about, like, what do they play for their kids? Because mm-hmm. I certainly have had those conversations many times. A lot of them will sort of say, the Beatles. Like, the Beatles
right.
is almost like kids' music that every generation that has loved the Beatles loves. And
right.
so that music is eternal. I would say Michael Jackson
yeah.
is in that same category as well. My daughter is 9 and loves Michael Jackson and
right.
listens to Thriller all the time.
Right. I think there are things that become things for kids because they are aimed at kids. And I think there are things that become things for kids because they're beloved by parents and okay for kids.
yeah.
You know? Because mm-hmm. there are things that, you know, they're accessible to kids, is
right.
what I'm saying. Like, there's a difference between accessibility and necessarily, like, a children's project.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's very fascinating to me.
Well, let me make my spoiler comment,
you
which
should.
Is this is why Maggie is determined.
Are you
that...
referring to yourself in the third person? I'm like,
yeah, sorry about that.
This is why. I think that's the word you were looking for was I.
Yes, it
yes,
could be.
Yes. Heckling
it
your mother.
It could be. This is why spoiler warnings are important, because there are the kids coming along. When my kids saw Citizen Kane, they already knew what Rosebud was. When today's kids are growing up, are they going to know before they see Star Wars what the relationships are
yeah,
of Star
Wars. If they
speak
German, they already do.
And what I'm saying is, you notice that I managed to do that without revealing either one.
Me neither.
Exactly.
My mother is a...
She is a psychotic
anti-spoiler.
It is true.
Not.
We will, and I say spoiler freako in the best way.
I say that with love.
Absolutely. We will. The next time Maggie's in town, we'll do a whole show where Maggie explains about spoilers and spoiler warnings and why they are important.
We could kind of.
I think we've done it.
I was going to say the nut of it, so to speak. She's anti-spoiler.
All right.
And I have to give props to my parents. For all that they weren't into pop culture per se, they trusted me as a 6-year-old, 7-year-old. They gave me the freedom to just sit down on the couch and watch TV with my 18-year-old siblings. And that was a huge gift to me today. I mean, I know 90210 and Melrose Place in a weird and, you know,
right.
detailed way that no one else my age
yeah.
knows. And I
yeah.
think that was a great thing for me. And it has totally influenced my television taste today. They've improved somewhat, but still catch them on the soap network.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny that you would say that, because when I was thinking of something that I wanted to mention as an example of something that reaches across generations, the first thing that came to my mind was soap operas.
Mm-hmm.
And if the obviously part of this has to do with demographically, they were aimed for many, many years at women who were staying at home with kids. But I know so many people who started watching a soap opera when they were seven,
Days of Our Lives,
something like that, Marlena. And they'll still be watching it when they're they'll still be watching it when they're 60.
And the same actors are
there are people
the entire time.
There are people who have literally watched the same show for 50 years, and there are very, very few pieces of pop culture you can find where people are following the same thing day in and day out. Not once every 5 years they read the new book by that author, but day in and day out for 50 years. And they watched it as kids, and they watch it as teenagers, and they watch it as college students, and they watch it as adults, and then they watch it as, you know, middle-aged people, and then they watch it as old
and
people.
And you check in and out.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the great underappreciated generation spanners is the soap opera, because boy, that's why you get these people who, when they're going to cancel them or something like that, that's why you get these people. It's a shrinking number. Mm-hmm. But that's part of why you get these reactions is, you know, how many shows can you cancel that people have been watching for 40 years? Like, that's not, you know, you would get the same reaction if you, you know, if you canceled Bones and it had been on for 40 years. You can imagine the kind of reaction you get.
Withered old David Boreanaz.
Emily Deschanel. Yeah.
At some point, they would have had to, you know, get together sometime. At any rate, so you should come and find us at the blog at npr.org/PCHH or on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH and tell us a little bit about your thoughts about pop culture that spans the generations.
What do you enjoy with your grandma and your kids?
Absolutely.
What can you enjoy with your grandma?
Absolutely.
What do you plan to enjoy with your future children?
Your future children and grandchildren. Our other topic today is sort of in a similar, in a related vein, I would say. We were going to talk about some things that are out of print or no longer available. Maggie mentioned one thing earlier, the Winnie the Pooh, and we were going to talk about some other ones out of print. Now, I'm going to start with Maggie because I know she has more examples than maybe anyone in the world, certainly anyone at this table.
We were told to pick one, so I picked two. I restrained myself, I'll have you know. I was going to mention that there is the concept that for the current reader of e-material, something may be out of print if it is in print but not available as an e-book. And
that's
I belong
true.
To a book reading group, and we were looking for the next book to read, and I said, how about Laura by Vera Caspary? And it's a classic mystery, and it made a classic movie. But the movie is different from the book. So we picked that, and those of our group who only read ebooks were shocked to discover it's not available as an ebook.
Wow.
So that's an out-of-printness that I think is going to increase.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true.
So that's point one. Point two now is the TV show that I have whined about incessantly since it went off the air, and that is SCTV. And you may find boxed sets of SCTV, and you may say, I understand SCTV, but what you do not have is season one of SCTV, when Harold Ramis was the head writer. Mm-hmm. And he went on to do things like Ghostbusters and so forth. But yes, it was rough. Yes, it had no budget at all, but it was so incredibly imaginative. And in researching it, I went online, I staggered about, I tried different Googles and was...
tried different Googles. You tried Bing. You tried Skippity.
Ask.com.
I Googled it, all right. So I looked, and I was thrilled that for the first time in 30 years, I was able to find a couple of clips. Specifically, I was able to see at last again Dr. Tongue's 3D House of Cats.
Wow, that sounds like an Urban Outfitters t-shirt or something.
Exactly. Really, you need it. And I watched it and I thought, well, it does drag a bit, but by golly, he's pushing that cat at the camera.
I wonder why he has such an attraction towards cats.
Because they make very good companions.
Right, because it's low budget 3D, and so it's him just like lurching a cat toward the camera.
Exactly.
It's really funny.
Now let's back up. What is SCTV? I literally have no idea.
I'm sorry.
SportsCenter.
SCTV. SCTV, a sketch comedy show, Canadian.
Yep. This is where we prove, by the way, that Glenn Weldon is the son my mother never had. Because if Glenn were at this table, he would have brought this up.
It's short for Second City TV.
Oh.
And the original group was Joe Flaherty, John Candy, Catherine O'Hara, Eugene Levy, Dave Thomas, and Harold Ramis. And I hope I haven't left anybody
out. All the funny Canadians.
So it's is it related at all to Second City? So it's,
yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Got it.
It is related to the Second City comedy troops and shows and so forth.
And it started in Canada as an incredibly low-budget process. The concept being that it was a low-budget TV channel.
Right.
And so you had a half-hour show of sketch comedy, and it was unpredictable. The second episode, I discovered, thank you, Google, had the episode of Captain Combat, which was a takeoff on Captain Kangaroo, except that in the course of things, Gunny Rabbit was shot. And you would not expect it. You would not expect in the Grapes of Mud episode, in which we saw Catherine O'Hara playing Ma Jode, you would not expect to see a children's program being prepared for the next broadcast, and that the host of that children's broadcast was Muley from Grapes of Wrath.
Oh,
so that it was Harold Ramis doing an impression of, I believe, John Carradine doing a children's broadcast. Ben-Hur as if performed by the Three Stooges, with John Candy as Ben-Hur, and his mother and sister, who, as we know from seeing Ben-Hur, were turned into leopards.
So this is what it is, Jess Gidner.
Wow.
It is crazy butt sketch comedy.
And none of it is available for me to pay for so that I'll have a nice print on a DVD.
And this gets into sort of what some of the examples that I brought is my assumption with SCTV. I don't know for sure, but with a lot of the variety shows were the thing that leapt immediately to mind for me. A lot of the problem with putting them in print is that they were licensing music differently. And, you know, the permissions are scattered to the four winds. And I once interviewed Dick Smothers from the Smothers Brothers, and sort of was talking to him about where are all these wonderful, you talk about it, I mean, highlights of that show certainly could be enjoyed by any generation. And it was sort of saying, like, where is the Smothers Brothers omnibus on DVD? And he was saying, we would drop in samples of music, and they weren't tracked separately. There's just one track, and you can't separate this incredibly popular and expensive song from this sketch or this musical performance. And it's the same thing that has made it very difficult, for example, to put WKRP on DVD.
They did WKRP, but they changed all the music hated it.
Yeah, and it was a Quantum Leap kind of had that problem where there was some incredibly famous scene, but they had to swap out the song that everybody associated with.
And Wise Guy had Knights in White Satin at a climactic fight.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was mentioning to Stephen recently, they're just now getting around to China Beach. China Beach is just coming out now. The reason for that is essentially that they spent years negotiating, from what I have heard, they spent years negotiating the music rights, every individual thing. And the press release is very specific because they know that this is now something people care about and pay attention to. They said it's almost all of the original music, which was all like, you know, they used Motown and, you know, all kinds of stuff, period music that they had to meticulously go back and individually clear every song. And Stephen, having cleared songs, knows what fun that is.
So, yes, each box set costs $400.
They are expensive, I will tell you. They are expensive.
You are paying for the licensed music. And I'm assuming that that's what the issue is with one that I remain absolutely baffled is not on DVD. A fairly short-lived TV show from the mid-90s that I watched called Relativity. And it was, the woman from Father of the Bride, and Father of the Bride.
Kimberly
Williams?
Williams, I think.
And
she's married to Brad Paisley now.
There you go. And some good-looking lunk.
Oh, yeah, no, David Conrad. He's a hottie McDottie. He was on The Ghost Whisperer.
And it was, you know, this incredibly good-looking... Can these two incredibly good-looking people fall in love?
Yeah.
And I just remember loving that show. It got canceled. I believe it made it through one full season.
Richard Schiff was on that. Toby Ziegler.
How a show like that, which did have a cult following, when you think of all the stupid crap that has been put out on DVD, but not a show like Relativity, I'm assuming it had a robust early to mid-90s
soundtrack
that they are having.
That is a great show, and it had a great, great cast. Adam Goldberg was on that show, and Jane Addams was on that show. Really, really good cast.
Also, season 4 and 5 of The Muppet Show.
Oh, really? Yeah. Did they stop putting them out?
Seasons 1, 2, and 3 are on DVD. Seasons 4 and 5 are not.
Are they coming?
Wow.
And I'm assuming, I don't know if presumably there are some holdouts, some musical guests, some musician who was their guest host that they couldn't clear. I don't know. But why on earth would those not be available? Whenever you think, why on earth would this not be available,
it's usually music. All right, Jess Gittner, how about you?
The summer of 2000, I was going into the 8th grade. and a spinoff from Dawson's Creek, just a short-lived spinoff, 10 episodes, aired on television. And it was called Young Americans. And I'm going to play the X-Boz where, you know, the main character, Will, who apparently, played by Rodney Scott, who was a very minor character, apparently, in Dawson's Creek. I didn't watch Dawson's Creek.
He was put on there to launch the spinoff, so he was only on a couple times.
Yeah, so let's let him tell us. Let's let him tell us what this is about.
New Raleigh. For me, it's home. It's an okay place to grow up, but as far as options, it's kind of limited. Raleigh Academy. The Billionaire Boys Club across town, where summer session begins this week on about 100 acres of rolling hills. And get this, it's high school without parents.
High school without parents.
With Nick Drake before he got expensive.
Yeah, no, so it had great music. That was probably the first time I had ever heard Nick Drake. Overall, I loved the show. 10 episodes. I've Googled that show every so often, every year, every 2 years.
Just see if it's going
to
show up.
Just see if it's coming up. And everything can be acquired.
Someone out there has Young America.
But you can, like, illegally buy it from Singapore on, like, sketch DVDs. But this show has some weird coincidences. Like, for instance, I know I'd mentioned back when I was on the first time on Pop Culture Happy Hour, I mentioned a lesbian movie. I'm going to go name some other significant lesbian landmarks in this series.
It's full of lesbian landmarks.
All right.
And by the way, I was in 8th grade. No idea. Okay, so Kate Menig, who... This is either her television debut or one of her early appearances. She went on to be Shane on The L Word, and everyone knows who that is. She played Jake/Jacqueline, a woman posing as a man at this all-boys academy.
I see.
And her love interest was Ian Somerhalder. And he's in the Vampire Diaries now. He was Hamilton, so Hamilton and Jake. So there was that interesting, like, gender thing where he was like, am I gay? I really like this guy who is a girl, you know. So that was really incredible. Another thing I noticed, second lesbian landmark, Gabrielle Christian, who was on the Canadian series South of Nowhere, had a very small part on this. But again, in the world of lesbian media, that is insane. That is crazy. Bat guano crazy, as Glenn might say. It's a little bit like a Dead Poet Society meets Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
The main characters, you know, a lot of monologue, you know, voiceovers, you know, a lot of narration of his essays. Kate Bosworth was also in it as Bella, the townie love interest of Scout, I believe. You know, these names just only exist in shows about boarding schools.
Casey.
Yes. So anyways, this show, it's not on. You can even watch parts of the episodes on YouTube. But I just loved it. I would, you know, after talking about it, maybe I'll buy the bootlegs.
Just as like I'm getting myself wound up about some early lesbian landmarks.
Yeah. No, but who knew? Just signs, everyone.
Absolutely. Well, you know, what we see, we seem to be getting into a little bit of a place talking about TV, and that's actually the same. I was going to say the same thing, which is, for me, my white whale, now that it's not China Beach anymore, mm-hmm. my white whale now is the missing seasons of Murphy Brown, which is the saddest thing in the world to me. Mm-hmm. They sold one season of it, and apparently no one bought it, wow. so you can't get it.
And there are, like, what, 9 seasons?
Yeah, and I don't care about the last, like, half of it, but, like, the first 4 or 5 seasons of that show, if you look at the at what happened with women-led comedies and women-led shows, because it not only obviously had a female lead, but also had a female executive producer, which right. was not hugely common in comedy at that time. That show, for me, was very, very influential. As I've talked about that show before and how much I've loved certain things about it. But that was a very influential show for me in terms of banter that involved women mm-hmm. that didn't have to involve them being, like, I don't know, either cute or nags or something like that, where banter that involved women where they absolutely kept up. And I don't want people to read that to say that women of the past didn't, like, nobody kept up until Murphy Brown. That's going to be, like, maddening. I'm saying, like, overtly could be aggressive and mm-hmm. sometimes unlikable, but still could be protagonists. And right. to me, I really loved that show, and I'm just heartbroken that I can't watch it. And it used to go round and round on, like, Nick at Night and stuff, but it hasn't been on in a long time, and I'm super, super sad about it. So I
should look on my among my beta tapes.
Yeah, you bet.
No. You're convincing my mother to keep her beta tape.
Oh, no.
Well, I will say, the last time that Stephen and I availed ourselves of part of Maggie's tape collection was when Stephen burned me copies of It's Your Move with Jason Bateman.
Yeah, which I believe now is at least has been on DVD. The other thing is, these things will get put out on DVD for a short run and then disappear. Like right. Erie, Indiana.
But I got copies of It's Your Move when nobody else had them. And I just want to thank you for that, Tom.
You know, I'm a pretty good guy.
And good at raiding your mother's tape collection.
Well, and by the way, if you loved Erie, Indiana, which I did, and I do have the DVDs, thank you very much. Let me recommend Gravity Falls, because one of the things to keep in mind these days is there are people out there making shows that mm-hmm. were influenced by the old shows. Right. And I was watching Gravity Falls and going, oh my gosh, yeah. it's Erie, Indiana.
Well, we talked about Gravity Falls.
Yeah, I mentioned Gravity Falls as a I think on the live show I talked about that I had suddenly, people had been recommending it to me in part for the kids. But I don't own Erie, Indiana, which was a short-lived, mm-hmm. very, very funny comedy with layers.
Yes.
I'm sure she'll loan it to you. Well, you should come and find us on Facebook or on the blog and tell us what is out of print that you are missing. And that brings us to our final segment. What is making us happy this week? Jess Gettner, what is making you happy this week?
First of all, I'm happy that I'm well and out of bed.
Yeah.
Mm. Apologies for that rerun last week.
Yeah, it wasn't you, man. It wasn't just you. It was everybody. The fates were not with us.
Okay, what is making me happy? Sort of a related two-parter. The game Tomb Raider came out last week on, you know, Xbox, PS3. Probably that's it. But I was never a huge Tomb Raider person. But what got me wanting to play Tomb Raider was watching Conan O'Brien's series called Clueless Gamer. It is an absolutely hilarious thing he does with one of his web producers, who's a big gamer guy. He's done it with Skyrim, Minecraft, Hitman, but this is how he describes his series, Clueless Gamer.
This is where I rate video games, which is ironic because I don't play them well, I have no experience with them, I don't even really enjoy them, but who better than me?
So I don't want to give anything away, but this Tomb Raider episode, I watched it at work, which means I watched it about 3 a.m. here, mm-hmm. and just was dying, exploding with laughter in the silent building, just, you know, disturbing everyone. So first of all, Lara Croft, the main character, it's a prequel, so it's her first, I think it's her first big, like, voyage to recover some artifact. I played it. She is now wearing pants. Before, she used to wear extremely short shorts, not great uh-huh. for exploring the depths of tombs, uh-huh. sharp rocks, etc. Uh-huh. I just got back into video games, but the game style is you don't really have health. You either do the right thing, you press the right button, or you die, and you die horrifically. and that's part of the hilarity of the Conan thing, and everyone should watch. There's a particularly horrific death that happens repeatedly involving a stake or a giant stick, so everyone should watch it. The game is really fun. I recommend it.
Excellent. I like it, Jess Gettner.
Yeah.
Maggie Thompson, what is making you happy this week, other than, of course, the fact that we're all able to have you in the studio with us.
I was thrilled to be able to discover, as I was preparing for this episode, that YouTube is there for me. I really don't use YouTube lot. But my gosh, there was Cyril Smith singing the old sow song. There was Dr. Tongue's 3D House of Cats. And there was the entirety of Ben-Hur as performed as if John Candy were Curly of the Three Stooges. And I hadn't seen that for more than 30 years. My sadness in this happiness is I want to pay somebody to do it legitimately. And if I make a big fuss about this, then they'll probably go in and yank it off YouTube.
Ruining everybody's fun.
Yes. So I am thrilled by YouTube. I don't know that I'll use it any more than I did before, but you can bet I'll go back and look for some other treasures of the past.
There are many wonderful treasures of the past.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I found the Little Rascals animated Christmas special, which I wore out at Mom's beta tape of. That's where I found the Great Toy Robbery, you know.
Well, let me add, when Maggie sent me the link to that YouTube clip of the singing, it was actually, it was one of those really old ones that was actually a video of someone playing a record.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
deep cuts.
All right, Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, it will surprise no one who has heard my spiraling descent into madness that I am going to South by Southwest this week. I will be leaving the morning after we record this very podcast, and for the last several weeks, I have been toilfully on the Austin 100. We mentioned this briefly in the intro to the rerun, but I reserve the right, having put about 80 hours into this project, to plug it again. I listened to 1,750 songs and picked my 100 favorite sort of discoveries. They kind of lean toward discoveries of my favorite artists who are playing the South by Southwest Music Festival. Now, people who are not going to the South by Southwest Music Festival around the especially around the time this podcast goes live, are sick to high hell of listening to people talk about South by Southwest. I wanted to put South by Southwest in a take-home carton, in a doggy bag. It is 6.5 hours of MP3s, 100 of them, to be exact, of wonderful discoveries of bands playing the festival. It is not only a stream, but all 100 of those songs, for a limited time, are available for download. You can click a button and download 813 megabytes of really terrific music. And it's only going to be available on the site until April 4th, so grab it while you can. I'm very proud of it. It was an extraordinary amount of work. It is the best deal in town. You don't even have to like us. Well, you should. You know what? You should like Pop Culture Happy Hour on Facebook as your payment for downloading. Like NPR Music on Facebook. Like All Songs Considered on Facebook. That's. But you don't have to sign up for a mailing list to get it. You don't have to do anything.
You click a button.
Just look for the Austin 100, go to npr.org/sxsw for all of our South by Southwest coverage. We have full concerts. It's going to be amazing. But really grab that Austin 100. It nearly killed me dead.
Oh, buddy. So what is making me happy this week? You know, anyone who's seen me in the last few hours knows that I'm extremely happy about the fact that I bought a car. Now, this might not seem like a giant deal, except that I have not owned a car for about 6 years. So for me, it is very exciting. I have greatly increased mobility. And for the purposes of this podcast and rescuing us from a rule violation, it brings me back to one of my favorite cultural experiences, which I have really been missing, which is the road trip with the windows open and the listening to music. I know this is a big Stephen thing as well. I really have missed road trips, and I have missed being able to just freely go out and just put the window down and play whatever I want to play and be on the road, and I'm super excited about rediscovering kind of road culture now that I have wheels.
Oh,
the difference is you're in a hot red car and Steven's in a minivan.
That's right. I'm in a dumpy old minivan with 160,000 miles on it.
Well, now I'm going to be the one giving Steven rides.
That's what is making me happy this week, in addition to the Austin 100.
Once his car dies. Yeah. But that is really truly what's making me happy this week. It is one of the ways that I experience culture and music and podcasts and stuff like that, and I'm really, really happy to have that option again and not have to rent or zip or whatever every time I want to do that. So I'm super excited. I cannot concentrate on anything else that might be making me happy this week, which is not to say there isn't anything. I just cannot think about anything else because I'm so excited. And that's what's making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at IDislikeStephen, STEPHEN. You can follow our esteemed producer, Jess Gittner, at JessGittner, GITNER. You can follow Maggie Thompson at ThompsonMaggie. There is no underscore there, right, Maggie? It's
right.
All just one
it's
word.
Just Thompson Maggie.
Thompson Maggie. You can follow our missing brethren, Trey Graham at Trey Graham, Trey with E, Graham like the cracker, or Glenn Weldon at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our esteemed producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katzeff, who is also going to South by Southwest.
It's like the Super Friends. We're going to bring Team Tomcat back together.
Yes, yes, and you're going to make the joke again about sharing rooms and all that stuff. You can follow him at Mike Katzeff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are listening to right now. Also, a special thanks to Steven's kids, who have tolerantly waited out this podcast taping as well. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
A special thanks to Maggie for coming in from out of town.
It was super.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.